We're back with Behind the Bench. We have one of the best in our town, in Motown, a pillar of our community, who's been with us since, I think, 1994. Devin Skillian is announced. He's going to start the next chapter. He's way too young to retire, and he's got too much energy, and he occupies that energy in this space. I'm sure he's going to do something great again. But, Devin, thank you so much for coming on to Behind the Bench, and I am humbled by you, and I respect you so much for what you do in our community and what you've done reporting. It's bittersweet. It's exciting to see you start a new chapter, but it's sad to see you leave my living room. So,
I really appreciate it, Todd. It's been an unbelievable experience for me, and since making the announcement, I cannot believe the reaction and the overwhelming. I'll never get around to all these messages. It's kind of daunting, but it's been so gratifying and warming to hear people express what you're saying as well. It's deeply, deeply touching to me.
Well, you have moved many people, and you've changed lives as much as anybody, making things better for us. And one of the things that I have always respected, and I think everyone does, is your fairness and honesty and transparency with journalism. That's, I think, a hallmark of you. And one thing you'd mentioned, and I wanted to ask you about, besides some questions about what's your biggest stories, what your mentors and things of that sort, but you talked about the free press. You talked about opening up and how important that is. You kind of are that hallmark, that journalist. Talk to us about that.
You know, it's funny. I can't believe that we've gotten to the point where when I talk about believing in strong, neutral, unbiased journalism, that I feel and sound like a grumpy old man. I can't believe we've arrived at a place where that's, oh, what a quaint idea. No, I have long believed that that there is a real critical role that a free, robust press plays in a democracy. And I, as I often say, yes, people want to point out that journalism is a business. It is. But it's the only one mentioned by name in the Constitution. And our founding fathers clearly understood how important it was. And some people have over the years decided that, and this isn't anything new. Over the years, we've obviously had very biased journalism and what we used to call yellow journalism.
Sure.
And there's advocacy journalism, there's all, of course, but it really has become an acute problem over really the last couple of decades, where it's just kind of hard to, it's getting harder to find people. You know, I've often wanted to get a tattoo of the Swiss flag somewhere on my body, because that's what I think my job is to be a robust
neutral
Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I try to play devil's advocate with everybody that I interview. And it's an old idea, but I think that the press often should be afflicting the comfortable and comforting the afflicted. And I marvel at the fact that those kinds of ideas are so challenged and out of favor with some today. And that's a terrible thing. And it's even made worse now, Todd, by the influx of mis and disinformation.
Isn't that the truth?
The most vital resource in the world. You can have all the rest of it. You can have the petroleum, the diamonds, the platinum and gold, if I can have information.
Right.
And if it gets polluted, then the entire system starts to break down. And we're living in a world now where people are telling us that there's alternative facts. That's not a thing. And that's not a healthy thing. And unfortunately, AI and a lot of bad actors around the world are only going to, it's going to be like judo, you know, with the idea behind judo is to take someone's strength and use it against them. And that's what's that's where I fear we're going to be if we don't get really mindful about where we are. That's a much longer answer than you wanted, but
no, it's so
you got me on my mountaintop there.
Well, I love it, but here's the thing: what I would love to have, you. You know, do that old Phil Donahue, you know, gig where you actually held people, because you see it, I see it all the time. You know, you turn on certain stations and it's not a journalistic station. It's more of a campaign of something. And we, you know, here to me, what you say, the free press being neutral, not having the bias or the agenda into the story. And it can get corrupted so quickly, unfortunately so. And you know, I think, and you're going to get me on my soapbox, I think Detroit, I echo your sentiments about Detroit when reading your article or your thoughts. Detroit was like the hallmark of great journalists. And think about all the big cases you covered. But, you know, you had all these great, great people that, you know, from Emery King, Ann Thompson, you know, Mike Lewis. I mean, all of those people that were in your life and you watched, Detroit was the hotbed for great journalists, wasn't it?
It was very humbling for me when I first got here and looked around at the reporting staff. I mean, I knew who the anchors were when I was coming in. It took me a little longer to fully appreciate what we had around here, as you know, at the reporter desks in this newsroom. And I marvel at Jennifer Moore, who was just a titan. You know, she was amazing. And you mentioned a bunch of them. There's so many. Steve Garagiola. Roger Weber, who is just one of the greatest storytellers I've ever been around.
Love Roger.
And there's so many people that I just, you know, really, it all seeped into me. I hope that I still believe that legacy is in this building, and it has always encouraged us all here to kind of rise up and try to be what was around us. But the other thing, Todd, is that this news town, when news happens in Detroit, it tends to have reverberations around the world, particularly if it's coming out of the auto industry, which affects every place. You know, there's just something about it's funny. I still think back to when I first got here, Bob Bennett, the great old reporter. We had a guy who knew how to work the street better than just about any reporter I've been around. He took me aside and he said, "Devin, you're just not going to believe it. Detroit is the greatest news town in the world. There's just not another like it." And I just kind of nodded, because lots of towns think that they are great news towns. Well, it wasn't but two or three months into my tenure here, I was like, "Bob, this is unbelievable. You are so right.
He was right. We got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Devin Scillian. And Devin, thank you again. I'm humbled by you, but thank you so much for being here. We'll be right back just after this. We're back with Behind the Bench and Detroit hero in my book, Devin Scillian, who was with the WDIV Channel 4 since 1994. And talking to Devin is like, I mean, for many, it's a pleasure and a privilege. And I still can't get over the fact how fast time flies.
In fact, in the interest of, if I'm going to talk so much about accuracy, I interviewed here in 94 and then got here in 95.
Oh, 95 was okay. Yeah, interviewed 94. Okay. Yeah. All right.
But you're right. But your larger point remains. How in the world is that almost 30 years gone by? I have no idea.
Right. So the stories, there's been so many. I know people are going to ask you this, and you probably have put a lot of thought somewhere along the line, maybe into this process, but give us, you know, like stories that moved you, top five stories, three stories that, you know, will stay, had that indelible imprint in your mind that, you know, will last with you for life, and things we may not even know about.
Oh, there's lots of big ones. I always go back to that very first Red Wings parade, the first Stanley Cup. And I was, you know, we were anchoring our coverage from out there on Hart Plaza and just looking at that sea of red. And back in those days, of course, Todd, you know, there weren't as many people wandering around downtown Detroit every day. Right. And to look out that day at the joy, but the crowd, and think, oh, this is what all this can be, you know, was that has stayed with me forever. That was such a joyful, joyous occasion. I go back to that one all the time. But yeah, there's other smaller ones. You know, just a couple years ago, I covered a story of a woman who was just about to she was losing her house, and she had lost it to a complete scam artist. Huh. She thought she was paying a mortgage, but she was paying it to a guy who didn't really own the house, had just told her he did.
Oh my!
And she had poured her life and heart into turning that house into something. And he ran off when she thought she was finally actually at where she had thought she had paid it off. He disappeared. And then the actual owners of it, of course, showed up and saw that it had been turned into a house. And they wanted like $40,000 from her.
Oh, my.
And so she was about to lose it. But a guy read about her plight online, and as an anonymous donor, came forward and wanted to pay off the $40,000 so she could keep her house. I dug into the story a little bit, and an unbelievable chain turn of events. It turned out that I knew that guy.
Oh, wow.
Lived in Dallas, in Fort Worth, Texas. He was one of my first news directors I ever worked for, and went to work for AR&D. In fact, owned AR&D, Audience Research and Development. And it turned out that I knew him, and I talked him into letting me actually do the story. And he did, because he thought maybe he could be an example for other people to just do the right thing. And I've got goosebumps right now thinking,
wow,
because I was there the day that he met June, and she got to, you know, thank him for buying her the house. And just, it was just, you know, those are the kind of things that'll stay with me forever. You know, the case of Ray Gray, I came along very, very late in that. People like Bill Proctor had worked so hard on that case.
Sure.
But if I had a little bit of, you know, started to do stories on it. And if I had a little bit of a part in Ray getting out of prison, well,
sure,
that's about as good as I could expect. Right. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good to get to turn back and look at that. So many of those kind of things. In 30 years, it's a lot of different people that have really stuck with me and will be with me forever in my heart and soul.
Wow. You know, the story of your friend, but, you know, paying off the debt. I mean, the kind, you know, I often say cruelty is a common agenda and kindness is a common possibility. You know, that does give you goosebumps when someone is that, sees that plight and then has the wherewithal and wants to do it anonymously. It's a beautiful thing. And
as we get closer to my departure date, I'm going to urge the station to let me run that story again, just because of the extraordinary example. What I loved about it is when I talked to Jerry, he got to town that day, and he said to me, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity and I'm going to seize it. That to me was what the story was about. It wasn't June's opportunity. Jerry felt that the opportunity was his to be a giver and to make a difference.
Right.
Isn't that extraordinary?
That's extraordinary.
The power
stuff.
Of that idea. Yeah. I love that.
If that doesn't give you chills, I don't know what does. So that's amazing. You have, you know, like everybody, we're not islands. We have to have mentors and teachers and inspiration that carries us through. The journalism, you know, has changed. The media has changed over time. You know, as we see AI and we see things happening in the world, God forbid, we keep on losing institutional knowledge. But in your lifetime, and you know, going through all the things you've gone through, who have you leaned on? Who's been that mentor to you, that someone, you know, that you could be a pillar in your industry, or just someone that, you know, you got inspired by, not because of the job, but because of their dedication to life and what they do?
There's a couple of them. It's funny, when I talk about my journalism heroes, I always mention Homer because I wanted to be Homer. And when I say that to like high school or college kids, they look at each other and go like, Homer Simpson? I'm like, no, Homer, who wrote the Odyssey. Because I think that there is an art to writing a chronology and a history. Now, obviously, of course, the Odyssey and the Iliad weren't, you know, necessarily based on factual reporting, but I love that, you know, what Homer came to mean, and so that's one of them. Peter Jennings was everything that I thought that an anchorman should be. He was such a fantastic foreign correspondent. Mm. He was endlessly curious, and he was the coolest customer in the world under fire. Peter just was everything that I wanted to be, and he knew his way around every corner of the world because he'd been a foreign correspondent.
Sure.
So that was a big one.
Did you get to meet him?
I never got to meet Peter. He passed away before. In fact, I was up. I was considering taking a job at ABC, and that was the biggest selling point. I was like, oh my gosh, I'd be working in the same building with Peter, and then I thought, well, maybe it's just not my time yet. And I didn't take the job. We stayed in Detroit, and then Peter passed away fairly quickly after that. So that was kind of crushing. But, you know, once I got here, Carmen taught me so much about Detroit.
Gotta love Carmen. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Mort taught me a lot about, in fact, that Mort is part of what gave me the courage to make my decision now to step away from the anchor desk, because it dawned on me about a year and a half ago that I had reached the age that Mort was when I got here to replace him.
Wow.
And Mort has had a very rich and full life. There can be life after, you know, the television news cameras move away. You know, you can live a life without putting on makeup and a tie every day. I've had some wonderful examples and some wonderful people around me over the years. It's been, I feel very, very blessed. Yeah. And like you said earlier, just being in such a great journalism town, you know, I got here, it was not only Mort, but Billy Bonds and Rick Fisher, you know, Huell is a great, you know, close friend of mine who was just always been such a standard bearer, you know, for what an anchor man should be and what somebody should be representing their community. So I've just had great, I've been very, very fortunate that way with the great people around me. You know, it's just crazy lucky.
Well, we're going to wrap it up, but I want you to give all the young and journalists to be that have to cover this great town. What advice, what sage wisdom would you give to the people that are going to be coming up and filling the chairs?
Well, the first thing that I always try to look for when I'm talking to a young reporter is try to be clear about why you want to be a broadcast journalist. Because if the idea is you want to be on TV or you want to be sort of, you know, famous, I have no problem with people who want to be famous or want to be on TV, but journalism is too hard if that's your real goal. Mm-hmm. So leave that to the people that want to do that, and maybe you can find another way. Because to me, and I mentioned this about Peter Jennings, the primary, I think, requirement of anybody who wants to go into journalism is an insatiable curiosity about the world around you. And if you're not all that curious about how other people live their lives, about how government works, about how business works, about about how our planet works, how our universe works, then I don't really understand what journalism's appeal would be for you. But I think that's really the biggest thing. Because Todd, you know me, I never run out of questions. I'm like a 5-year-old kid. I just am constantly curious about so many things. How the law works. On and on and on. So that's the biggest thing. Then you start getting down to some of the things like, you know, always have your compass trained on the truth. Because at the end of the day, when all the smoke clears, that's, to mix two metaphors there, sorry. But at the end of the day, that is what's going to hold you in good stead. And you'll be able to hold your head up and you know that you had the, you know, you did the right thing. And you can sleep with yourself. as long as you keep your compass trained on that. You know, the funny thing about hosting a program like Flashpoint, where there's a lot of very intense and passionate opinions expressed all the time, when I do get hate mail from viewers, it's always struck me as really interesting that about half the hate mail I get is like, I cannot believe Channel 4 puts a conservative like you on the air every week. And the other half can't believe that a flaming liberal like me is allowed to have his own TV program. I think that's a good sign.
That's a great sign.
An equal opportunity offender. And I guess I would urge that. Oh, and the last thing for a reporter, always, Todd, you know this better than anybody, follow the money.
There you go. Someday you and I will write a book on Flint.
You know it.
I love you, and I thank you for everything you've given me and the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. God bless, my friend.
Thank you so much, Todd. I'm grateful.
Be well. We'll be back just after this with Behind the Bench.